This is an oral history of muralist, artist, and educator Xochitl Neville Guerrero for the Mission Murals Project. I'm Camilo Garzón. It was recorded on July 23, 2021 in Xochitl's home in Oakland, California. The voices you'll hear will be Xochitl's and my own. Before we began talking, she used sage in and around her house in the same way she sages the walls she works on to create murals. Around us were her jaguar masks, her working desk, as well as a series of painted canvases, mainly of women with natural elements, including water, plants, the sun, and the moon. She offered me some tea and pan dulce as I set up the recording gear. This oral history delves into Xochitl's personal life, artwork, and upbringing in the East Bay Area. We discuss her work in the Nosotros Venceremos mural, and the significance of recurrent images of corn and iconography like trees and jaguares. The themes of separated dualities and dual depictions add another layer to her work. We also talk about the importance of dreams and of inward exploration. She shares memories of her teacher at the Chicano Art Center, muralist Rey Patlán, with whom she worked with in Placa, and about her memories of Fran Valesco at UC Berkeley. She talks about her work with the Mujeres Muralistas and how her friend Esther Hernandez invited her to help paint the Latin America mural with muralist Patricia Rodriguez, who became her teacher too. We discuss Xochitl's personal and working relationship with her father, muralist Raimundo Sala Nebel, and her work on the Maestra Piz mural in San Francisco's Women's Building, and about her role in helping preserve and amplify Chicanx and Latinx heritage in Oakland, the San Francisco Mission District, and beyond. Here is the oral history. Okay, so today is July 23rd, and I'm here with Xochitl Neville Guerrero. And I'm talking to her in her home in Oakland, California, on behalf of the Mission Murals Project. If you can just now say your full name and where were you born?
My name is Xochitl Neville Guerrero, and I was born in Berkeley, California. However, I was raised in Oakland.
So East Bay.
Yes, through East and through. Bay. Mm-hmm.
When so. You think of your upbringing and just the interesting context of that, what do you remember when you were growing up about your parents, about your family, about your neighborhood? What are some of the memories that come to mind?
Good question. No, let's see. I remember growing up, I was the youngest of six. And I remember growing up having our grandparents with us. My parents were working, so we stayed with our grandparents some of the time. And I had a grandfather, he was a healer. So he would, you know, he did a lot of things to help us. We grew up with our having our grandparents with us. And grandmother and grandfather. My grandmother worked in the cannery, and my grandfather worked in the Southern Pacific Trains in West Oakland. And my parents, my father, his name was Raimundo Sala Nevel. He came from Mexico, Mexico City. And from what I understand, he came as a young man. He was like maybe 17, 18. And he came during the Bracero program. However, he didn't stick with the program. And he traveled around the United States. And but eventually ended up in Oakland, West Oakland, where he met my mom. She was very young, still in high school. But like I said, I was in a family of six, and I was the youngest. And my father, I believe, when he taught himself how to paint, to draw and paint. And he would go into like nightclubs and do portraits of people. And he would always say, like, the first 100 or first 99 were the worst, but then the 100th was the best. And so with that meaning, to practice meant you know you got better with your work. So how I could say I got started was I saw my dad drawing and painting, and somehow he said that I scribbled on the floor and then he put the paper underneath, and that was my first works of art. That's what he tells me, that story. But I remember in elementary school I was drawing a lot, and because I saw it at home, it was at home. My dad had paintings by then all over the house, and I saw them, you know, so I was drawing and painting in class, and the teacher would get mad because they say, well, why is this child sitting here at the table drawing when she should be playing with the other kids or playing with the blocks or the little kitchenette or little kitchen in the play area? She's sitting there drawing, you know. And I did detail works of art, you know. I do like a big house with a fence and the curtains, the door, everything. I do all the details on there. And one day my mom came to pick me up, this was kindergarten, and she says, she said that to my mom, why is she drawing all the time? She doesn't get along with the other children. She says, because her father's an artist, so she sits there with him and draws and, you know, paints or whatever. So that's why. She goes, okay. So she kind of left me alone after that. But I do remember, like, age 4 also, maybe before I was in kindergarten, I remember hearing that I was going to be an artist and possibly a teacher. I remember hearing an artist. It was like in the wind or something, or a voice. Because I was very sensitive to color and stuff. I could see auras and all that, but I didn't really talk about, because I didn't really think about it at that age. And so sometimes traumatic experiences happen at different ages, and it hit me at 11. So I think with all that pain and all that stuff that happened to me, I got into art more. My colors were bright and colorful, and, you know, so that was my whatever you experience, it transforms and goes into your creativity. So in a way, to me, art was creating to... By my experience that I went through, it helped transform my creativity into my art. So it wasn't just creating art, but it was also healing for me. So we were also my father had us work with want to overcome that memory. Because we were in the house of creativity, because my father, he being a painter, he also liked to hear music and dance and all that. So he and my mom, they both had us take ballet, folklorico dancing. I also took flute music in school. My brother, by the way, I had two sisters and a brother. And one sister took violin classes at school, and also my brother, he took drum. He was a drummer. He became a drummer. And I took flute. I took up the flute. But I actually wanted to play saxophone. But my mother said that wasn't very ladylike, so I stuck with the flute. But I played the flute for myself, and as a teenager, I used to go to the park and play while other people, in the 70s, while other people were playing congas and, you know, other instruments. I'd take my flute sometimes and play. Also, let's see, in the as I got older, probably, because I was born in the 50s, I grew up in the 60s, 70s, and so forth. But I remember being involved in the, with my father, because my father was very active in the movement, you know, the various movements that were coming up. So there was the Chicano art movement that was happening, and before, you know, of course they had the Black Panther movement, so it inspired all these other people of different cultures and ethnicities to also rebel. I mean, we were being so messed over. It was like the man versus the people, right? I think the farm workers movement really helped in opening a lot of the doors too, because a lot of people were going to meetings and fighting for human rights and political rights, and people were, you know, however, the artists at this point, it was also good for them too, because they were making posters, and then the teatro people, they were doing skits and all that. If not in the in the farms, they were doing it in a lot of the communities, you know, a lot of the cities and all that. And I myself got in a theater group. It was called Teatro Triste. And I was so shy. I do. But then when I got on stage, they couldn't get me off, because I was like, you know, just got into, I let it all out then. So, but I came out in this skit. It was about against the Vietnam War. And I was a mother, and a friend of mine was the grandmother. And it was very dramatic, you know. And we had some humorous and comedy and all that skits, but also we had, you know, some that were very very dramatic. And but it made a lot of people come together to see us perform. And throughout the whole Bay Area, there was a lot of other people performing, other groups. And I know there was started with the Teatro Campesino. They're a big group here in California. And they inspired a lot of us to perform. And they also had like conferences where a lot of us would get together and meet. And it was so inspiring. And that helped me get out, because I like I said, I have this thing where I don't talk. I can't talk sometimes, but I'm observing. I'm taking everything in. I'm listening. I listen a lot. I write poetry. Because in school I wasn't very good with that, you know, writing, but I do write poetically. I cut out a lot of words, you know, I write poetically. And let's see. And then after the getting into theater, my dad wasn't into that, but he was, yeah, actually he wrote a few skits for us. And so some people performed, but he didn't actually, he sort of emceed sometimes, you know, when we had a programs and all that for the community. But then there were so many things going on, you know, it's like you couldn't keep up, but you had to because you sort of missed out with some things. So, but there was also demonstrations and things going on, and everybody knew each other. And it's so different now. Like, nobody knows each other. Or, you know, it's like you got to kind of be in that kind of position or something. But anyway, let's see, after the theater group, I was in another one. It was called Teatro Calcetín. And that was while I was in college. I went to junior college, Laney College, and I was in performing with the other people. And it was sort of a continuation of being involved in the community, working with the community. And so then from there, I went to, it was like I was in all these different things, you know. And well, my family were having children, all that. I never had children. So my husband and I never had children. So that's why we were able to get involved in a lot of these different forms of art. Roberto was mainly a painter, and he also works on murals with me. I still work on murals today. It's not as easy as it was, but my brain is still intact there, so I try to do what I could do now. You know. And let's see, this back to the 70s and 80s. Let me see. Some of the murals I've done, let's see, in the Fruitvale in Oakland was Clinica de la Raza. I worked on that one about 3 times.
With your dad? With your dad specifically.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Which is, it's one of the things that you're the most known for, but mm-hmm. I feel very happy that you decided to share that you also dabbled in, you know, poetry, even if it's writing for yourself. You're mm-hmm. writing poetry.
Sure.
Flute. I would have loved to hear you play saxophone. Like, that would have been amazing.
So would I.
And, you know, you can still learn, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's just really nice to hear all of these things, because when I've learned about you and mm-hmm. what I've learned about you is indeed that you're a very sensitive person and sensory person, both things. I do think that you're a person that generally is more perceptive than, mm. or at least has more of a proclivity for perception, right? Like you like listening and you like sensing and perceiving things, and also your understanding of yourself, right? The transformation of what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask, but I'm happy to also not do that, in terms of, you did say that there are some traumatic experiences.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to get into anything. I think it's important to just understand that you're saying that some of these traumatic experiences influenced you into needing to still express something from them. And you've created really incredible things that really speak about you. And that's very hard to do. It's not only talented that you have that talent. It's also a matter of, that's brave to try to still do something with what happened to you. It seems like you were referring to like some family things happening where... some family things happening or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you would like to share? And if not, just say no and we can continue with a couple of things, like from college, like Cal State and all that. That's okay too.
Mm-hmm. I think since it was a negative thing, I almost committed suicide at 13, but something told me you have your whole life ahead of you. So with that, it sort of like brought me back to myself. And it sort of turned my whole life around. I can't explain it, but I just changed after that. I changed my name. I changed a lot of things. And I started working in my community more so. I was like maybe 13, 14. I got a summer job. And I started working with children. And I really loved that. Working with children. And I wanted to find a safe place for them to work. So working in the community, I was always working with children, like after school programs or summer school programs, because I wanted to make a safe place for them to work, to be expressive, you know, to express themselves. So even though there was a negative thing that happened, or there was other times too, but because of that, I said, okay, I got to do the opposite. I can't let it break me down or kill me or whatever. I'm going to fight. So in a way that made a positive, that made me try to fight back or to say, hey, I'm not going to let that thing stop me. I'm going to keep going. And so that's what brought me out to fight or to help people or to help other people protest against something, because I felt that's where the power was at. You know, that's where the strength was at. And it starts inside of ourselves. Also, I was getting a lot of accidents. So I said, okay, I got to figure out a way to heal myself. So I start taking classes in healing work. Sometimes not because I wanted to, and something pulled me to do that, you know. Or I wanted to do, like, say I took Tai Chi, and I want to do Tai Chi. And then I got pulled to learn how to do Reiki, which is a form of healing of the hands. And so I learned to do that. And that helped me a lot, because I used to hurt my back a lot because I was working on murals, and sometimes they were portable, and sometimes I had to end up moving them myself because everybody took off and I was left by myself. I forgot about it. I said, oh, okay, how am I going to get this piece, this panel inside the house or inside the building? So I had to work on myself a lot. You know, because I couldn't always afford to go to the doctors or whatever, chiropractor, to work on my back.
Well, I would just say it's very brave that you just want to even talk about those kinds of things. And I'm glad that you found ways of expressing yourself and of finding joy and of finding, like, light. Because mm-hmm. I feel like you're known as the art mom for a reason by a lot of these students and kids. And I think that your influence still is to this day so important in so many younger artists' mm-hmm. lives mm-hmm. and the community. And also you found so many ways of just transforming yourself, as you were saying. And I just wanted to tell you that's very important. All the things that you've done, and including, as you said, working in yourself and finding other ways. Yeah, thank you for sharing that, because it's one of the hardest things that could ever happen in the mind of any human. So mm-hmm. I feel fortunate that you wanted to share that. And I am more than sure that because you shared that, someone listening to this, understanding all the things you've done to even overcome some of those things, as you said, will feel inspired to just find other ways and mm-hmm. to feel that there are alternatives and find help in different ways. So I'm glad that you told us that. And when you think of your Cal State years, right? Because Laney was, as you said, a first step.
Yes, after Laney, I transferred to UC Berkeley. Mm-hmm. However, I only stayed a year. Mm-hmm. I call myself a UC Berkeley dropout. But there was some good points and there was not so good points. The good was that I met a few teachers that kind of helped me stay in there. I didn't tell them, but, you know, it kind of made me stay there a little longer. Who was Ray Patlan and Patricio Rodriguez. They were my art teachers at the Chicano Art Center. And I'm glad I took that class because it just kind of made me feel more at ease and at home. And I also took art classes in the art department, which was completely opposite. But I stuck with it for that year. And then I just said, I had enough. I don't need this abuse. But anyway, I was a student there, or, you know, I was still active in the community in Oakland and other areas, and I always had a sense of sticking in the community but also going to college. I didn't think of, okay, well, I'm in college, I'm going to forget about everybody, or I'm going to change completely. But I just had a sense that I needed to be still in the community. And also to keep active, you know, in the movement, because it was still happening then too. And I was meeting a lot of different artists and people. My father was still, you know, we were still active, working together on different murals and things like that. In fact, Ray Patlan and my father and I worked on another mural after the Clinica, that was 77. We worked on another mural together. It was for some of the inmates in, I think they were Santa Rita or something like that. And we worked on a mural in the same community. And then, you know, we got involved in other projects and stuff, other mural projects together.
I am always happy to hear that some of the people that I've been fortunate to talk to in this project, Ray Patlan, Patricia Rodriguez, Fran Valesco, which I'll ask you in a second, that all of them had an influence on you, right? Like, they were teachers at first, but mm-hmm. then they became collaborators and colleagues. Mm-hmm. And you also have done that too, right? Like, that's the beauty of also, like, your teaching and also just your journey through life. A lot of the things you learned from others, you've taught yourself also to others. Mm-hmm. What are some of the most important memories that you have of people like Patricia, Ray, or even Fran Valesco? Because they all have spoken highly of you.
Well, I met Patricia before, because when they had the Mujeres Muralistas, Patricia was one of them.
And you helped them with Latin America.
Yes.
Which is such an important mural that no longer exists, but it was such an important thing. Mm-hmm. What do you remember of you in doing in that mural with them? Like, what was it like then to be in a group of mostly women, which was mm-hmm. unfortunately unheard of until that point, but yeah. After that, it was like, absolutely, we are Chicanas, we are women, and mm-hmm. we are muralists. Mm-hmm. How did it feel?
Well, even before that, I could say that, backtrack a little bit. My first mural was in high school in 1972. From there, I went to Laney, and they had a like a, what do you call it, they had what they had like a work study program. Okay, so there was one woman that was getting artists or people that weren't interested in art to get into mural painting. So we went to different neighborhoods and started painting some of the elementary and high schools. And so that gave me a little more, you know, experience in doing murals. And then I was taking art classes at Laney, and I met Esther Hernandez, who is also an artist, well-known artist. And so she says, oh, I'm working with a group of women in San Francisco, and they call themselves the Mujeres Muralistas. She says, would you like to come and, you know, help paint? I said, sure, you know, I'll go, you know. So I went, and that's when how that connected like that. And well, I was excited because there was other women like myself working. I was younger, but you know, I was a little younger, but I you know, I was so used to working with my father all the time. You know, that he was trying to protect me, I think, but anyway, I was working with them and I had a good time, you know, and it just felt good being with other women and, you know, painting. I remember painting a lot of the corn, the maíz, and I do that a lot still in my paintings I do, and murals, I put corn or, you know, there's always some kind of maíz. And if you notice the one behind you, yeah, it's a corn goddess. I do a lot of corn goddess. She just comes to me in my dreams. That's another thing. I dream a lot, so I incorporate a lot of what I, the visions I have in my dreams. I put that in some of my paintings. And also I meditate, and I meditate and sage myself and all that. And then so the visions come out much stronger, I think. And also I do inner churning. I put a drum beat sound, and then I count from 10 to 1, and then I open the door, then I go in another world and pick and choose what I need to get, or I listen, I see, you know, all that, and then I get the information I need, and I come back out, and then I work on something. So I do that a lot because that helps me get in a deeper state, I get more deeper information. You go more to your unconscious or your subconscious, whatever, and comes out. So that's how I work more now.
And what are some of those images that you see? Because behind me, I do see the goddess of corn. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
For anyone familiar with Latino or Chicano agriculture, maíz is just such a fundamental thing that we've had in mm-hmm. most of the cultures. What are some other images, or as you're saying, like visions and dreams, which they're all related to also memory and things that we've heard or even has passed down onto us? What are some of those other images?
Some have been like animals, or you see butterflies, snakes, whatever. The jaguar. I did that mask over there. Oh, that's another thing, I got into mask making. So the highest one up there is a jaguar. So I've worked on various. I tried to do like a performance and wearing masks and making costumes. And I went through a phase of doing that. Other images, I guess, are, I like to put the tree of life, you know, like the ceramic. I put something like that in a mural, the tree of life, but I also included people of different cultures and ethnicities, and I don't know, just also elements like the air, water, fire, earth, you know, different elements and directions and all that. I really feel that we're all indigenous, or at least people on this that were from this continent. My father would always say from Alaska to Argentina, we're all one people, we're all indigenous people, or at least we start out indigenous. You know, we're all native people here. And so I really feel that. And I, when I went to Mexico the first time in 1969, it was my first time, I saw a lot of poverty, but yet I saw a lot of beauty, you know, because the way they dress, you know, all the flower, the embroidered and decorative blouses and the women, the children. I mean, I just saw so much beauty, even though there was a lot of poverty. And so a lot of those people, I wanted to show the strength of the people. So a lot of my images, earlier images, were like that, you know. And it just really hit me so hard that I guess I, you know, I have to show the other side, not just the poverty and, you know, the people. I said, but I didn't have beauty, to show as you the said. Beauty too.
Yeah, and I think one of the essential things is, even in your first mural, which you were working even with students and you yourself were learning, which was Nosotros Venceremos, which means like we will triumph, we will win, up to like Placa, which is like such a important thing that Rey Patlán and you all there. There's these images, and there's these images that are not only beautiful but also are depicting these kinds of images, elemental images, agricultural images, indigenous images, and iconography. And I feel like one thing that is very important about that is that you also had like a social justice bent, what we call these days social justice. Because Placa, when you did that in 84 and later with Rey, Balmy became a very important place to oppose a lot of things that were happening in Central America, especially. What is the thing that you remember the most from those times, and even just your work to make murals that had these kinds of messages in them?
That's a good question. There, at times we were like all together working, and other times we were there by ourselves. And so, but there was a lot of people from all over the world coming through, going through, and it was very powerful because they all, you know, saw the different murals and were saying, "Wow, look at this, look at that," and then, or they would ask me, "What are you doing?" And even though I didn't reflect Central and South America, I put, because I was working with kids at the time, and they were breakdancing then. So, so mine reflected more of kids. It was called something like Youth of the World, Let's Create a Better World. So I have like kids coming out of a tube of paint, you know, so there's a lot of colors. And then on one side, some kids are breakdancing. Some were actual kids that I worked with. I told them to breakdance so I could take a Polaroid shot. And then they were dancing, so I put that on the wall. And then you see one corner of an explosion. It's black and white, you know. And like saying, we're trying to recreate a better world because this world isn't... and you know, all these different things are happening in the world, you know, this war and violence and all that. And then even in our neighborhoods, all that's happening. So we want to create something better, you know, and to give the kids hope, you know, and to not give up and, you know, keep. So even a lot of murals themselves were like to educate people and to make them feel good about themselves, or to see themselves, or to be proud, or, you know, different things like that. It's educational, you know, and trying to get people to think. I mean, even if it was something negative, it would make them react or say, I don't like this, or, you know, or I love that, you know. And so, but we were hearing a lot of that as we were working, and I just felt good working there as a group, you know. And at the end, we all took a picture together, and they made like a poster out of it. And so I was like, wow, we finally did it. But there was times that I went by myself, or I took a friend with me so I wouldn't be by myself there, you know, because there was some murals I've worked on that I was alone. But I always saged the wall. And there was sometimes when there was somebody had died there, because they had candles and they had balloons there. And I said, oh, somebody died. Okay. You know, I just said, oh, I'm sorry. You know, and I just hope things will be better here. You know, that's why I sage and all that before I work in a space, especially if I know I'm going to be there a while. You know, I even had somebody throw a bottle at me while I was working, or I was kind of walking through with my box of paints through a playground to get to the wall, and there was a guy running, and the police was running after him with a gun. It was very surreal, and I had to back up and then go behind a garbage bin and wait, and there was a helicopter flying around looking for the guy, and I'm like, oh, wow. I mean, you're right out there in the elements, you know, and you just try to do the best you can. And I kind of wonder sometimes, I mean, not all the time. I just say, well, I got to do it. I have to do this for the people or whatever, or for somebody else. You know, it's not always for me, but it's for somebody else. And then I wonder, I say, why am I doing this? You know? But it's almost like it's more than me, you know. It's something that I'm supposed to do, you know. I can't describe it, but it's just something that I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, you know? It's something that is, in a sense, it doesn't even matter the explanation as more. Mm-hmm. It's more as the need or the desire to the you feel compelled to do mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. And that's a very surreal story. Yeah, like you are indeed in the elements, all of you, because mm-hmm. you're in the public.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and it's the street, and it is the city, and it is a very important thing that also really creates an atmosphere for this work to also talk back to the community. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't in the elements, it wouldn't, right? It wouldn't mm-hmm. talk in this level. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of the things that you're saying about even staging, which you did even before we started this conversation, I felt very happy about it, because it doesn't matter who believes in what as much as what is it that is meaningful of mm-hmm. it. And I think that it is meaningful. And I'm glad that you even did that when you were doing murals, because it mm-hmm. is something that brings you some sense of comfort. And I feel like
and protection.
Protection, which is so big in the street. And I'm glad to hear that these are things that you also were doing, even doing that. Because I feel like one thing that is very clear about your decisions or even your approach to things, it very much is about healing. And as you were saying, even in your family, you mm-hmm. had curanderos. Right, like mm-hmm. you had people that had this knowledge passed down through generations that mm-hmm. happens to be about multiple ways of healing, and you've also healed people through art, right? Like there's very important moments in which art can be the saving grace for someone. And do you think that you have any specific examples where that has happened? for you or for someone else?
I know that I've had to work with a number of kids, like in a classroom, and they were like all over the place. Their energy was all over, and some are running around and stuff like that. I've had to quietly, but, you know, kind of ground myself. I say, excuse me, I go out the door, I ground myself, I come in, and I shot light through my eyes around the... I don't really talk about this normally, but I had to kind of bring energy around the classroom, and then somehow they calmed down. So I said, oh, thank you. Something worked here. And so, you know, that's... I've gone through moments like that, or just trying to encourage people, young people, to express themselves by leaving them alone. If I knew they were really good in what they were doing, and they had that, you could tell through their body movement, or like saying, don't bug me. I said, okay, you're doing a great job. I thought it was important to encourage them to do their work, or it's good work. And says, no, that, because I've had teachers say, hey, fix that up, or that arm looks out of place. You know, that's a more technical type of teacher. And I was thinking, like, well, what if I wanted to make it that way? So you just have to, like they say, sometimes you have to just go along with what they say, because you don't want to get into an argument or whatever, and then do it the way you want, you know. I mean, I was told that too, because there was times where I was very rebellious, or no, I don't want to do it like that, or I'm not coming to class. You know, I felt like I don't want to come to class because they're trying to intimidate me, and I don't like that, you know. But I had to learn, you know, a lot of that.
I think that's a beautiful thing, that it is at the same time that you were learning by teaching. Mm-hmm. And it is the same thing that also was happening to an extent, even with your first mural, as we were mentioning, Nosotros Venceremos. It is never just a matter of like, I am the teacher, I'm not doing anything. No, you were at the same time collaborating and learning at the same time that you were teaching. And mm-hmm. And I feel like...
Another thing with the Nosotros Venceremos, si. That was my first mural, and the teacher that showed me that technique of doing squaring, you know, putting squares and then drawing the image from a piece of paper. I had to work with like three other girls and who had no experience in art, and I was supposed to do the mural and teach them at the same time. I was thinking about that this morning, saying, wow, you know, I really had to do all these things, and I didn't even know. I was learning myself, you know, I was learning on the spot, you know, and at the same time training or teaching these girls at the same time what to do, and I'm like learning the same time. And I've been in situations like that before with other projects, you know, like with mask making, and then working with gourds, you know. I've had to learn on the spot through another artist, so I've been able to do stuff like that throughout the years.
I think sometimes
that's what it takes, you know. Sometimes, I mean, you could look at objects and things in the outside, you know, garbage or trash, and could be treasures for others. And I could look at it and see it made into something else, you know, or I imagine, say, wow, this would look good to make into something else, you know, and be pretty good. So I kind of learned to use what materials that were around.
In multiple ways, even, you know, in the human sense, like people were around you, and you also learned to work with them, mm-hmm. to create all of these things, and you saw something in them that maybe they didn't see in themselves too, mm-hmm. rescuing that, mm-hmm. too. I think that that's fundamental. And when people like Esther or Fran or Ray or even Patricia, mm-hmm. reference the time that they worked with you, it's just very nice that all of you have such appreciation for each other in that way, because that's hard to come by, right? In mm-hmm. a lot of creative projects. One thing I did want to ask you about is about if you have any memories, for example, with working with your dad in that mural at La Clínica de la Raza mm-hmm. that you haven't been able to say before, and or other things, because as you said, like, he also was an artist or a muralista.
Mm-hmm.
Sala was well known, as you are well known too, and I think that it's very nice to see that there's like a through line there. Are there any stories that you would like to tell about your time with your dad?
My dad was like the opposite of me. He was very verbal and liked to, you know, laugh and you know, with everybody and all that. And so actually when we worked on the Clinica mural, he says, "You work on a design, I'll work on another one, and we'll see which one gets selected." So his was, I loved his, but they didn't pick his because they weren't ready for it. And because it was more indigenous, you know, had more elements, indigenous elements. And mine was maybe what was happening at the time. And I had like the farm workers, I had the migration of people, and I put some of my niece and nephews in there, their faces, with the family. And then I had children, and one child was talking to the other children, showing them about his culture. And so it had a lot of different elements. It's like a collage of different things. But and I was working in the cannery at night because I was going to go to, this time after UC Berkeley, I took a year off, and then I ended up going to Cal State East Bay. I finished there. And so I was going to start going to school. So I ended up working the cannery for 1 year, or not 1 year, but one season, so I could get money to go to school at Cal State East Bay. At the time, it was Cal State University Hayward. That was the name of it before. And so I would work there at night, get home and go to sleep a few hours, and then work on the Clinica mural. So my dad knew exactly what that was like, because he used to have to do that for years, you know, and working at different times, so he understood. But we worked together on developing it, you know, outlining it. We used the square method again, and so we did that. I had to get up on the scaffold and work on top. And then, you know, we just pulled it together. But I learned a lot from him. You know, he was very strict, but yet, you know, loving, because that was his way. He lived very hard. So, you know, he was different with me than he was with my friends or with other people. So they saw a different side. but still, you know, I know he meant well, because he, you know, he had, like I said, a hard life. And I know now that he did it all for us. You know, what he did and how hard he worked was for all of us. I'm kidding. It was for all of us. And I actually talk to him more now, I think, you know, in a calmer way. Now he's in spirit, we talk, but I understand a lot of things that he was talking about that I didn't always want to hear, you know. And I said, oh, okay, now I know why he said that, or yeah, okay. Or, you know, we have conversations, or if I need help, I ask him for help, and he'll help me through with some things. I don't feel like he's completely gone. It's just like a veil or something that's, or he's in another dimension or realm or whatever. But I feel, but I, like I said, I learned a lot. And he would always say, there's three truths. He'd always say, there's your truth, my truth, and what really happened. And I hear that a lot, you know, and when he says that, because he would always say, well, observe the way people are. Or he'd say, what did you think about so-and-so, about what they said, you know? And because I didn't always talk. I'm like listening, and he's doing a lot of the talking and negotiating and stuff like that. But, yeah, we're like in sometimes in different worlds, but then we have to come together and talk. So that's kind of like the way we could talk to each other, was with art, through art. That's what kind of got us talking and working together.
And mostly. One thing that I feel like it's important is sometimes we are quick to say these things that our parents are, we are not that. And, you know, like, Tochi, you laugh a lot too, and you're very, the way you tell your own stories is also, I would say, probably influenced by the way he also told stories. So it is not as different as sometimes we think of it. So I'm glad that you've also been able to reconnect to some of those things these days, or like hear things that you hadn't. I think that's only nice. And I only have a couple more questions because I don't want to take that much more of your time. And one is about your collaboration with the Mujeres Muralistas, as well as with the other mujeres that worked on the Maestra piece, which is, what are some stories that you remember about Latin America, for example, and the Maestra piece?
I don't feel like I worked enough on the one with the Mujeres Muralistas as much as I did with the Maestra piece one, because I was actually working on two figures with that one.
And what were the two figures? And I agree, I understand what you're saying. At the same time, I feel like muralismo as a form is about every collaboration and every person that contributed. You still contributed to Latin America.
Yeah, I think because I was younger and I was still learning, and so they were so busy working on, they were, you know, like sometimes artists have their assigned section, right? So the more people are on there, they have their own section that they sometimes work on. So I was just, you know, kind of filling in areas there, but still working with other women. It was nice, you know, because like I said, I was so used to working with either my father or other males, you know, and it's a little different.
You know? How so? According to you?
I think the guys are a little more technical. Or they, you know, they're like, well, that's not right. Can you fix that up? And the women are, yeah, that looks good. Or could
you? So it seems like a little bit more encouraging.
Yeah, it's a way they say it, I think.
I feel like that's everything. And that's kind of like the most special thing of like the stories that I've heard of, like, you know, you, Patricia, Fran. It just feels like it was more of a welcoming environment for ideas. And sometimes it seems like the guys were caught up on the technicalities. Which, at the same time, I am glad to see that, like, you still took elements of both of them and incorporated it in your own. You said you did two figures for the Maestra piece, right?
Yes.
What were the two figures?
Okay, I have a story behind that. I mean, it's, like, interesting because I was working on another project, like an altar project, in Oakland. It was called something like Festival of the Lake, I think, at the time. It was in the, I think this started in the 1990s, right? The Maestra piece.
Yeah, it got finished in 94. Yeah.
And so at the time, actually, I believe somebody called me and they wanted me to work on it. And I says, I have like two murals I'm working on right now, so I really can't get involved, but I could maybe work on something. So later on, they told me they had two figures to work on. And I said, sure, fine, I'll probably go this week. So, however, I started working on this on a weekend, or it must have been Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I was working on this large altar with a couple other artists, and I forgot to sage. I forgot to sage the altar like I usually do. And I didn't do it because we were kind of rushing and, you know, trying to hurry up and get things done. And then as I was leaving, I was walking around the lake. All of a sudden, I felt like something wiggle up in my spine, in my back. And it just felt kind of weird, almost like an air kind of, or something. I don't know. But anyway, it's a hot day and everything was fine. I go home. I sit down and I couldn't walk. I tried getting up walking because the pain was so sharp on my back that I just couldn't walk, and I was crawling on my hands and knees. And then my first thought is, well, how am I going to take the altar down after on Sunday? So I ended up putting an ice pack on my back and, you know, just trying to relax and laying down and relaxing. And I said, okay, Saturday, I was supposed to go back, and I couldn't because I couldn't walk still. So I end up going to a chiropractor who helped me to be able to walk again because I really couldn't walk, you know, because I was in so much pain. And then I told him I can't come back to take everything down, so I had to write everything down, give it to my husband, and he had to get all the stuff and bring it back. So after that, I says, you know, Roberto, my husband said, let's go look at the wall. let's go look at the women's building wall. I says, okay. So I was able to walk by then a little bit, but it still hurt. So we went over to the wall, and he says, okay. I said, oh my gosh, the wall is so big, you know. And then I looked at the figure. I'm thinking, how am I going to get up there, you know, on the scaffold? They said, you're going to work on these two figures. This is Maria Sabina, and she's working on this woman here. I said, okay. So what I do is I put my hands on the wall. This is for real. I put my hands on the wall. I says, if it's meant for me to come back, I'll be back within a week to work on the wall. It just blurted out. Like, I don't know why I said that, but it just blurted out. And as I put my hands on the wall on those two, it was like outlined already. I just had to fill it in. And that week, that was, I think, a Sunday or Monday or something. That week, my sister was walking around the lake and met this woman that did Reiki, which is a form of healing of the hands. It's energetically, you know, so energetic healing. So she got me, she says, oh, I met this woman and she does healing, and, you know, you got to come. You can't walk too good. You better come, and, you know, they'll work on your back or whatever. So I go, and three or four people are around me, and they're all putting their hands on me on my back, you know, and they're all around me, and they're doing that. And when I got up, I said, gosh, I feel so good, I could flip. Where do I sign? How do I get? Because I was thinking of all the different projects and things, that car accidents that I've been in, and it just all went to my back, you know. And so I says, this is, if I feel this good, you know, I need that to help me, you know, help my body. Because they said, well, you're not only healing other people, but as you're healing other people, you're healing yourself. So I said, wow, I like that. So I start working with them later, but we also had to heal other people, not charge them, you know. It's like practice. So I go back, like I said, I went back to the within a week, I started working on the mural after that. So I was able to work on it.
Wow. Yeah. And what were the two figures that you made?
It was Maria Sabina. She was a Mexican from Oaxaca, a healer, a curandera. And I didn't really know of her too well till I started doing research on her. And that woman in the middle there on that painting, that's her. The one with the sun rays.
Yeah, it has an aura.
The aura around her, that's her. So I really feel good about her. And so after I found out about her, they have a video about her. And it's amazing how I was thinking about it, that in the 60s, a lot of the, like the Beatles and other musicians at the time, they went to go see her to get a healing. And her people were really mad. They said, like, why are you healing these people? Some people are coming in limousines and, you know, these rich people are coming. Why are you healing them? She goes, because I'm supposed to heal people. Even though they said they saw God or, you know, they were seeing it in a different way. She says, well, I'm a healer. I'm supposed to heal whoever comes my way, you know, to heal me. So when I found out about her, I said, you know what? I used to see like in the hippie, during the hippie movement, they had all these bright colors and they were talking about LSD and this and that. Well, she inspired a lot of them because she used mushrooms for healing. And a lot of these people were seeing colors and all that. Timothy Leary got involved on that and, you know, these other people. And they did research and on the mushrooms, and I think they not only LSD came out of that, but also penicillin, I believe, came out of that. So, you know, people were interested in looking her up.
And these days, especially with even in Auckland, they're trying to figure it out with psilocybin specifically. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the figures, and it's only fitting because you also were being healed and you were drawing and painting a healer. And then you also became a healer yourself. There's multiple levels of not only connection but resonance there. And what was the other figure? Do you remember? So the first one was this healer.
Oh,
from
she
Oaxaca.
Was working on a woman. So it was those two figures.
Ah,
that's
those. So it was like the
it's in the
wait,
book
so it's
there.
Yeah, it's the healer and the one being healed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, Jay, I just have one final question. And I think this one is just, I think, the most important question, which is, it's a question that sometimes we ask only when people are gone or supposedly when people are supposedly older. Mm-hmm. And it's not fair, because I think that it's a question that needs to be asked more of us, even constantly throughout life. And it's a matter of how are we to be remembered, right? Like, how do we, like, if someone speaks of us, a mm-hmm. student, you, Art Mom, if a student comes and talks about Sochi in 10 años, like, what would you say? Like, what is it for you that you would like to be remembered for as a person? More than anything else, as a person.
That's a good question. That's sometimes the hardest one to answer. I think because I'm still learning. You know, you never stop learning. Wow. I guess I would tell them to it's important to know who you are. You know, where you, in order to go somewhere, it's good to know who you are, your roots, your people, your ancestors. Don't take life so hard on yourself. We all go through bad things, but you could learn to get out of it. Like, suicide is too easy, but to live, that's hard, but it's not impossible, because some people go through so many more things, and they're good people, or I mean, they've gone through their transformation, and there's some leaders, and they become leaders after that, or so just try to be the best you can, you know, learn basic things. I can't even say just learn from other people too, from observing. You don't always have to do what other people do in order to, because your outcome may be different than theirs, you know. So learn in different ways. You don't always have to go to, like my dad would always tell me, you don't have to go to college to be an artist, you know, but if you want that piece of paper or you want to teach in a higher level, higher grade, then sure, you know. But to me, kind of experience a lot of different things before you make decisions, because sometimes what you really want to do isn't what you're supposed to do, you know. And so, but keep informed. Also keep informed, because also our future changes. I know that for a fact, because the older you live, things change, even for you. And if you don't keep up with it, you get left behind, you know. So you always have to be on your guard. No. Be grounded, you know. That's another important thing, grounding, roots, that whole thing. But and also love yourself, you know. Love yourself, and you're able to love everybody and everything too. That changes as well. Just a lot of things, I just, you know. And what I hope to I hope people learn from this and see another side of me. They might, some people think that I'm always happy or I'm quiet and all that, but there's other sides of me too. And I'm like everybody else. I want to be respected, and people don't always understand me, but at least to respect each other, that's a good thing. And
I think so. that is the best way of finishing this, because I think that's exactly right. And I think that you made it clear with all of these stories and memories that you told me today about all of these other ways that you also are. And you just are. And I'm very happy that you gave me this time to just be able to talk to you and tell me these things. So thank you so much. It was a very important conversation, and I appreciate your time and also your work, even working through memories, because that's always hard. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for talking with me today.
Igual.
After the oral history recording finished, Xochitl showed me a couple of photographs right next to a 1,000-piece puzzle of one of Frida Kahlo's self-portraits. One photo was of her dad in front of some of his artwork, and the other was of herself, meaning Cesar Chavez. Dualities, as you might have come to appreciate after this oral history, are an essential part of how Xochitl sees herself and the world. While she doesn't like public speaking much, calling it too much performance, she's also very interested in theater, sharing that once she found herself on stage, they couldn't get me out. Reflecting on her struggles as a teenager, she's directed her energy and talents towards healing, working in her community with organizations like Eastside Arts Alliance and Girl Project. She was aptly given the name Art Mom, healing others to heal ourselves, as she told me in our oral history. A synthesis that results in Xochitl. This oral history of Xochitl Nebel Guerrero was a collaborative effort, like murals also are. The team behind it was
Erica Gengzi,
Maisa Plunk Graham,
who served as executive producers,
Natalia de la Rosa,
who served as a production assistant. The rest of the team included
Javier Briones,
Kevin Carr,
Chad Curver,
Carrie Cordova.
Stephanie Garces.
Melissa San Miguel.
And it was produced and mixed by me, Camilo Garzón. The Mission Murals project was organized by the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art and funded by the Institute for Museum and Library Services. Thanks for listening.